Simple. I've thought about that question since Sunday, since I've been together with Heath. I do. I wish I didn't want it. I wish I had less ambition, but I do want it. I drop the mascara wand onto the vanity. I love my job. The work here is energizing. I'm doing everything I've wanted, and I crave more. And that's why this thing with Heath is so complicated. I want him, and I want work. You're a modern woman. You want it all, she remarks. I do. Call me greedy. Nothing wrong with being greedy, as long as you figure out how to deal with it. And I will do that after tonight. I support this plan, she says. I finish my makeup, head to the freezer with Emerson in my hand, and open the icebox for a minute. Sweat be gone, I say. She laughs. I miss you something fierce. My heart squeezes for her. Miss you too. I end the call, grab a burgundy blouse, and button it up. As I leave, my phone pings, and Andrea's name flashes across the screen. Andrea, you've got this. Can't wait to hear how fabulous tonight is. Deep breath. Maybe I do have this. I reply with a thanks and a multitude of emoticons. As I head down the steps in my building, my phone goes off like a jackpot. When I reach the street, I check it again. My texts are filled with notes from TJ, Easton, and Nolan wishing me well. I fire off a text to Emerson. Joe, did you tell them all to text me with good luck? Emerson, nope. Your friends remember stuff. Smiley face. With a fresh dose of confidence, I head into Highsmith. I've run countless auctions before, chatted with clients, schmoozed collectors, and waxed on about the meaning of art. That's what I do during the cocktail reception, barely meeting Heath's gaze at all. I say hi to nearly everyone, shaking hands and hearing tales of kids and puppies and other acquisitions in their collections. In a few minutes, the auction will begin. I rush to the ladies' room to pee and fan my face. But I'm not actually sweating. And hey, that's awesome. I feel good about all of this. The only issue is what's next with the job and what that means for Heath and me. I'll figure that out later. I leave, head into the Highsmith auction room, and take my post at the back by the wall so I can watch the action unfold. As the auctioneer walks to the stage, a few last-minute stragglers rush in, including a woman I haven't seen in 10 years. Poppy. Chapter 22. Joe. I haven't rehearsed a word. Why would I? I didn't expect to see Poppy, or my father, for that matter. But here they are, mere feet away. This is the first time I've seen them together since that day in the park, when they were wrapped up in each other, leaving me reeling with the betrayal of a summer of lies. That cruel hurt clung to me for months, and then for years after that, though in a faded form. Now, I take a beat to catalog my emotions. My pulse spikes a bit faster, but not too much. Beyond that, I feel little more than curiosity. Is she here to apologize? But as soon as the thought touches down, I dismiss it. I don't want one. And what's more, I don't need one. Time has done its trick. It's washed away the pain, and I can navigate this moment without that bitter ache. I flash her a professional grin, then him. Hello, Poppy. Arthur, I'm glad you could make it. Thank you. You have some great items in your collection. You've done some truly amazing work, she says, and it sounds legit, her compliment. I hope you find something to your liking. She smiles, more warmly than I expected. Then she steps toward me, sweeping her blonde hair off her shoulder, making like she's going to hug me. I'd rather not be hugged. The hurt may be over, but I don't need to open my heart to her. I step back. She smooths her skirt instead. I just wanted to be here for your first event in London. Ever polished, she gestures to the room, buzzing with energy. You should be proud of yourself. My dad chimes in a little awkwardly with,
We wanted to show our support.
That's all he says, but from him, it's high praise. Did Poppy put him up to this? Tell him to change his ways? Who knows? I'm not sure I ever will, or if it matters, but those few words are so much better than his usual backhanded compliments. I appreciate you saying that, I tell him. We all sound stilted and uncomfortable, but that's to be expected. I turn to the woman I used to think of as a sister, and I try to show some grace. And how is everything with you?
The gallery is fabulous. Life is good, she says, taking my father's hand once more. I'm happy. Are you?
The answer is easy. I glance around at the auction room, teeming with people, my new co-workers and the ones who have become my friends, like Rhea. There's the man who's become my person, and beyond these four walls, there's a city I'm learning to enjoy. I don't love London yet. It's not quite home yet, but I'm getting there. Yes, very much so. Then I take a breath, dig down deep, and say, and I'm glad you two are happy together. That's hard to say without gritting my teeth. I don't feel happy for them. Truthfully, I'm not sure I'll ever be pleased with my one-time best friend shacking up with my father. I definitely don't condone their lies, but I also don't have to keep poking that bruise to see if it still hurts. I'm done with this part of the past. I'm not saying I'm happy for you, for Poppy, or for my father. I'm saying it so that I can finish a race I barely realized I was running till now. The letting go. And speaking those words aloud gives me something I suppose I've been quietly searching for all along. The last kernel of pettiness, the crumb I've held on to for a decade, falls away. I'm free of them. And that is why I'm truly content.
We are happy, my dad says, answering an unasked question.
Poppy gazes at him with an adoring smile, echoing, we are. Perhaps, in some ways, I understand her as well as I can. Love can't often be stopped. That's good, I say softly, then gesture to a pair of empty seats. They head down the aisle, and the auction begins. It's a record turnout with record sales. I'm proud of my team's hard work, beyond pleased with the success of the night, aglow with satisfaction. Proud of our leadership. I do love my job so. I love it with my whole heart. That's a gift, getting to do what you love, and I want to always treasure that. I lift the champagne glass high, clinking once again with Heath. I swallow some bubbly, then set down the flute to wrap an arm around his waist and jerk him against me. Hey, lover.
Hey, girlfriend. He teases, looping his arm around me.
We're at Sticks and Stones later that night, celebrating the auction at the place we met. But I also want this little fete to end so we can celebrate in other ways. He sets down his glass, then I bring my lips to his, whispering, let's celebrate naked. He glances around.
Right here?
I tug his collar. Don't tempt me.
Fine, fine. We'll go to the loo and have a shag there.
I laugh, delighted, utterly giddy. God, you're so British, it's sexy.
So my nationality turns you on?
I put on a lascivious grin. Yes, yes it does. Does that bother you? He pretends to consider that for a second, then shakes his head.
No, I'm not bothered at all. But one suggestion. Let's do the turning on in private.
He says, then presses a hot kiss to my neck, brushing his stubble-lined jaw against me, planting greedy, possessive kisses along my throat, up to my ear, then whispering,
I want to take you home. Eat you, fuck you, make love to you, congratulate you properly in bed. His words ignite 10,000 fires inside me, and I ache for him to put out all of them. And soon. A few minutes later, we stumble out of the bar, but we're not drunk. We're tipsy on this night, on success, on the high of the auction, and on each other. On falling in love. On letting the past go. There's only one thing standing in our way now, and we'll figure the work thing out this weekend. We kiss on the street as midnight nears and cars and cabs race by, as passers-by chat and laugh, reveling in the late spring night. Heath drapes an arm around me, and we walk like that, me and my Englishman, along a busy street, surrounded by Londoners and Europeans and tourists and everyone. I feel a lot like champagne, especially when Heath stops me on a side road under a faintly glowing street lamp. He tugs me close, and I'm filled with bubbles, half expecting another kiss when he cups my cheeks, but he doesn't drop his lips to mine. He just gazes at me serenely, maybe like he has a secret. I tilt my head. "What is up with you, my English hottie?" I ask. Okay, maybe I'm a little buzzed. He smiles, shaking his head.
"I solved it. The riddle of you and me."
I lift a questioning brow.
"We're a riddle?"
He tips his head in the direction of St. James, where we work.
"Yes, that whole complication."
Color me all shades of intrigued. "You did?"
"I believe I did," he says,
sounding deliciously pleased. My eyes widen, demanding answers. "Well, don't keep it all to yourself." With a soft laugh, he sweeps his lips across mine, lighting me up, making me melt. Somehow, impossibly, I'm even hungrier for him. But curiosity wins. I pull back, setting my hands on his shoulders. "What did you solve?"
"On Tuesday, after the bank holiday, I'm going to give my notice."
Chapter 23. Heath. She blinks, then shakes her head. But it's not like she's saying no. More like she thinks she didn't hear me right.
"You're... what? You're doing what, Heath?"
This wasn't an easy decision, but it wasn't the hardest one either. I just hope I don't seem like I'm overstepping, even though this choice solves so many of the questions I've had lately about what I want. "I'm giving notice at Highsmith," I say, so we're clear on that point.
"But you love art," she insists.
"Exactly. I love art, but I don't love the job anymore. Not like you do. You love it like it's a piece of your soul, like you'd be devastated if you couldn't plan and curate these incredible collections." Her brows knot in a frown.
"It's not that way for you?"
I think she already knows the answer. "No. I love it because I'm good at it. It's been a salve while I've found my feet and my purpose. Now it's part of my identity. But I'm not in love with it anymore. I'm in love with you."
"I'm in love with you too, obviously,"
she says, but she still sounds shocked. "And that's another reason why I'm doing this. I don't want to compete with you. You told me the other day that you don't like it either. Neither of us cares for the complications," I say, swallowing roughly, hoping I get the words out right. "I don't want to presume, but I just want to make it easier to love you. And that's really what I want most." I pause, the whole city rushing by and everything I want right here in front of me. "It's you." Her breath hitches. A tear rolls down one cheek, then the other.
"You don't have to do that,"
she whispers, her voice trembling.
"We can work together. We can figure this out."
I shake my head. "I know I don't have to quit. Trust me, I've thought about this a lot. I've thought about us and you and me and what I want. And I've also thought about what's right. And honestly, Joe, it's you who deserves the post. You're incandescent when you work. It's a light shining inside you, and it's beautiful to witness. You should have the post, and I believe from the bottom of my heart that you'll get it. But I want to do this anyway because I don't want to mix work and love anymore. I don't need the crutch of distraction anymore. She blows out a breath, taking a beat. Because of... She doesn't finish, but she absently touches her throat as if to say, because of me. But she's not a replacement for work. She's not a new balm. I love her for who she is, not because she soothes an ache inside me. No, it's not because of you, Joe. At first, I poured everything into Highsmith because I was there and I could do the job well. But I've had time to heal by taking photos, reading, wandering the city, spending time with friends, and by living, just living life.
What will you do, though?
She asks. And my darling woman sounds so distressed. That's the last thing I want. I know I'll be all right, and she doesn't need to fret. I run a hand down her arm. I'll figure that out. I'm not worried. I've got some ideas, I say. I'm not wealthy, but I'm wise. I've saved over the years, and I'll be fine for many months and longer. Time enough to find the thing that feeds my soul, the way planning auctions and curating collections used to nourish me. I tighten my arms around her. Work has given me many things, a place and a purpose, but the job isn't the same as the work of curating art, and the job itself doesn't feed my soul like it did, like it so clearly does yours.
I don't want you to lose out on what you love.
I shake my head. I love many things. Art and books and London and my family, the theatre and my brother, curry and beer and discovering hidden gems, taking photographs and telling stories through them, and you, most of all, you. Maybe it's too soon, too crazy, too much, but life doesn't give you many second chances at love, let alone a great love. She feels like the next great love of my life.
You can't quit.
She says softly, her eyes shining with tears, but her voice is a feeble protest. Her lips seal to mine, and she kisses me like she's saying thank you.
You just can't,
she whispers, but she's running out of steam to protest. But I want to, I tell her, and I think a change will do me good.
Are you sure?
Positive. I want to find work that gives me joy, the way you give me joy. If it makes our work lives less complicated, that's just the jam on the scone.
I love jam and scones. And you.
She grabs my face.
And when you say those things, you make it impossible not to fall deeper into love with you.
I laugh. Then I'm brilliant. She grabs me harder. Pulls me closer, kisses me desperately. It's a kiss that leads straight to the bedroom. Mine. Once there, our clothes vanish. She's on her back, naked and needy, pulling me close, then wrapping her legs around my waist as I fill her. I groan, she murmurs. And I was right. This is the answer. I hook her leg higher around my hips, thrust deeper, and give her what she wants. Already I've learned her needs, her wishes. She loves it deep and hard. She loves to be fucked with abandon. She wants me to take her. I grab her wrists, lift them over her head to pin her in place as I swivel my hips. I sink deeper, pump harder, show her with my body how much I want all of her. And I do. I want all of her, separate from work, just her for me. And like that, I bring her over the edge. Her lips part and she calls out my name in a breathless, stuttering gasp. A gorgeous cry that rips my own climax right from me. I join her on the other side of bliss. We pant and moan, coming down from the high together. We spend the next day like that, together. We wander around our London, taking photos of us kissing. It lasts until Saturday night. When her phone pings at dinner, she grabs it, scans the message, and her face goes still. What is it? Looking up, She meets my gaze. Her irises are laced with both fear and rabid excitement. She swallows roughly.
It's my mentor, Andrea. She said her friend at the Met has an opening for a curator. She's recommending me.
For a job in New York. Chapter 24. Heath. Some job openings move slowly. Some are rocket fast. The Met is the opposite of Highsmith, it appears. While Emily has kept the VP post unfilled for more than a month, the Met wants to hire Stat. The museum wants to fill the job before the summer begins in earnest, before crowds pick up. The Met is the most popular art museum in the United States. Joe worked there several years ago with Andrea, who's now at a museum in New Haven, but still advises the Met on personnel. Joe tells me all this as I walk to her flat after dinner.
And then she said, "This is a huge opportunity for someone so young and for a woman so young,"
she says as we round the corner to her place. Andrea isn't wrong. The Met is an art pinnacle. Joe holds my hand, squeezing it, a little too tightly. That's not like her to hold on as if she needs a mooring. Oh, bloody hell. She's nervous about the interview. I've got to try to soothe those worries. Did you love it while you were there?
I did,
she says, reaching for keys in the side of her purse, then fumbling at the lock of her building. It takes her a few tries to get the door open. The collections are incredible, I say, and it's not a chore to give her a pep talk as we head to the fourth floor. Not only does she need it, but it's my turn. She said all the right things when I told her I was leaving Highsmith. And yes, a job in New York opens a box of new questions, but now hardly seems the time for a how will we do this relationship talk.
Yes, they are. But Heath,
she turns to me, worry in her eyes as she opens the door to her flat.
Should I go?
There can only be one answer. Yes. This is a tremendous opportunity. When do they want to see you?
As soon as possible. I don't even know what to do next.
Then I need to help her. Let's get you on a plane, woman.
Right, right. Yes, a flight, of course. I could get on a plane tomorrow morning and be in New York Sunday night, I guess.
You do the interview Monday morning when the office is closed here, I say.
And I'll be back in time for work on Tuesday,
she says, taking her time to work out the details. So it's a plan.
Yes, I could do that.
She drops her keys on the kitchen counter, biting her thumbnail briefly.
But I have a job in London, and you are in London.
Joe, this sounds like working at the Met has been your dream. She gives an apologetic smile, a tiny one.
I admit it has been.
And you want to go to the interview? We just worked through the logistics.
Yes, I know.
A deep breath, then a grimace.
I should be jumping at an opportunity like this.
She steps forward, grips the collar of my shirt harder.
But everything is happening so quickly.
Everything with work, everything with us. But the answer doesn't matter right now. What matters is that she gets on that plane with all the confidence she possesses. Yes, some jobs are like that.
Would you?
She stops, swallows, then speaks again.
What would you do if you were me?
I'd go to the interview. I leave it at that. There is a time and place for relationship talks, and it's not now. Do I want her here in London with me? Of course I do. My family is here, but I don't want her to ditch the interview and regret it. And if the Met is too wonderful to turn down, then we'll figure out what that means. For now, she needs to get ready for a flight. Anything could happen. You don't know the future, so don't shut the door on opportunity until you've seen what it's offering, I add.
But you live here and you're giving up your job, and that's huge. I can't just jet off,
she says. But there's a tiny note in her voice that says, or can I? That means I need to get out of her way so she can choose her own adventure. She's 32, vibrant and bursting with energy. She has a bright future in front of her. You can, though. You'll regret it for the rest of your life if you don't try, I say, even though the prospect of her saying yes to the job is a new fork in our road. I'm not sure of the path we should take then, but I don't want to plant new worries in her head. She needs to give the interview and the job her full consideration.
Heath,
she says, and my name sounds a bit like a plea, and a little too like she's asking for permission. To pursue this, perhaps. Joe, you're in love with art and curation. This possibility is too good.
But what about us?
She asks, all sadness and worry. But then her eyes spark. Possibilities flicker in them.
Come with me.
A shocked laugh escapes me.
What? We can get away to New York for the weekend. Or a night, rather. But so what if it's only one? We can make the best of it. Please say you'll come with me.
Oh, sweet, brilliant Joe. You know I love you madly. Her shoulders sag more.
But...
why is there a but?
I hear one,
she says, her voice thin with worry. I take a steadying breath. There's no but, I promise. You should go do the interview. You want to, and I want you to. Then we'll talk about us and long distance and what it means. Her lips quiver as she shakes her head.
This is silly. I love my job here. I love you.
But you don't love London, and New York is your home, I say gently. You have to try for this. My voice cracks. We'll figure out the rest. She tilts her head to the side.
We will?
Of course, I say, and I mean it, though I know it won't be easy. But she needs to make this decision without my influence, and I need to let her. We will find a way, I promise. I'm not sure how to keep that promise, but I know I want to. She ropes her arms around me tighter, pulls me closer, then murmurs,
I want to find a way.
When she kisses me, though, I can taste the salt of her tears. Early the next morning, I open the door to a black cab, set her overnight bag in the back seat, and kiss her hard. Break a leg, I tell her with a smile that I'm trying to mean.
Thank you,
she says. Then she gets in the car and leaves. I walk away through the neighborhoods I know well, a little aimless, a lot lost. I don't go home. I just wander along side streets, down alleys, looking for something to photograph. Something that sparks an idea, a story I can tell with my camera. I find nothing.
Chapter 25. Joe. Good morning. Welcome to your British Airways flight from London to New York. Our flying time is 7 hours and 35 minutes, and we've got clear skies across the Atlantic. We should have you to the Big Apple at 10:30. Be sure to fasten your seatbelts, lock your tray table in the upright position, and settle in. The flight attendant's chipper English accent should make me feel better. After all, she just uttered my two favorite words, New York. But in my chest, my emotions are a ball of twisted yarn, the kind you can't unravel. Am I sweating? I feel like I should be. Instead, my stomach is jumping. Licking my lips, I stare out at the tarmac as we begin to taxi, but the view doesn't soothe me. Jerking my gaze away, I let out a long, heavy breath. The gray-haired lady in the seat next to mine shoots me a sympathetic smile. I'm a nervous flyer, too, she says. I try to smile back, but I feel like my lips are cracking my face. I grab my phone from my jeans pocket, click on my texts, and tap out a note to Emerson. As Heath suggested, I told her and the guys that I was coming. We're meeting for dinner in Chelsea, at one of our favorite spots. Maybe when I see them, I can sort out all these what-ifs. Far too many thoughts ping-pong in my head. Emerson. Made an executive decision.
I'm going to meet you at your hotel, and we're spending the afternoon together. Girl time. And that's my official declaration. That makes me feel a little better, but not by much. I'm out of sorts, twisted upside down. New York is my love, my home, my place, and yet I already miss Heath. The biggest what-if of all. Joe. Good. I need it. I'm kind of a mess. Emerson. Talk to me. Joe. I might lose service soon, but I'm feeling conflicted. Emerson. Because you love him. My emotions crawl into my throat and stay there in a huge, uncomfortable knot. Joe. Yes. Emerson. Oh, sweetie. That's so hard. You leave home, take a chance, go out on a daring adventure, and then you meet your dashing Englishman. Joe. That sounds like a novel. Emerson. Tell TJ to get on it. Joe. I will. And then TJ can tell me the ending. Emerson. Or maybe you can. How do you want it to finish up? Her question is the question. If I get the job, will I ask him to move with me? Would he? And can I even ask? His family lives in England. They're getting older. Plus, he urged me to interview, but then didn't want to come to New York with me. So maybe he doesn't want to move. And we'll have to find a way through long distance. For the first time in ages, I wish my mother were here, that I could ask her what to do. What would she say? I close my eyes, another tear slipping down my face. I don't even know anymore. I can't hear her voice any longer. The plane taxis, picks up speed, then lifts off. We soar into the sky, and the city skyline turns into a series of specks far off in the distance. And just like that, London fades from view. A little over 7 hours later, I arrive at JFK and make my way through security, opening the app to order a lift. But when I look up, I see four familiar faces on the other side of the cordon. I run to my friends, my family.
Chapter 26. Heath. Museums are not some of my favorite places to be on a Sunday in London, or any major city for that matter. Too many crowds, too much jostling, too little time with the art. But I don't have a choice today. I need to give notice Tuesday, if I'm still giving notice, that is. If Joe goes to New York alone, will I simply stay at Highsmith? Will inertia win? No idea, so I return to where my journey started. Sometime while Joe is in the air, I head to the St. Pancras International Station and buy a Eurostar ticket. Once on the train, I settle into a window seat and crack open a book I picked up the other day from Nigel, half photography, half essay. Along the journey to Paris, I read the travelogue, checking out the photos of rustic European towns, perusing the stories the writer tells of each locale. That keeps me occupied for the 2+ hours, but thoughts of Jo are never far from my mind. Is she sleeping on the plane? Working? Reading? Talking to her seatmate? My mind trips along to new questions. What sort of travel companion would she be? And will I ever find out? Then future questions. What sort of we will there be if she takes the job in America? Will we see each other once a month? Will she ask me to join her? Will I say yes if she does? The questions prick at my brain, but I do my best to shove them aside. I read until we're not far from Gare du Nord, and then I stare out the window as the train rattles to a stop in Paris. Growing up, I visited this city with my family many times. It's the place where I fell in love with art. Catching the metro, I make a beeline for the Musée d'Orsay in the heart of Paris. As I buy my ticket, I wonder if I will feel what I did at 16. That sense of inevitability, that certainty I'd found my calling, my passion. The lions greet me and feel instantly familiar, like old friends. I meander through galleries I know by heart, visiting the Toulouse-Lautrecs, the Monets, my favorite Van Gogh, his Portrait of Dr. Gachet. The doctor's coat practically shimmers. He always seems both thoughtful and amused, but I'm never sure which it is, and my impression of him varies by the visit. Perhaps that's why I chose to study art. It feels alive for me, rich with history and tales. The paintings and sculptures all tell their own stories, if you slow down to listen. I pay my respects to all my old friends, the ones who inspired me more than 20 years ago to carve out a career in this field. One by one, gallery by gallery, I visit them all. And each time I pause, I ask myself the same question. What's next? Mostly I get the same answer, and that's good. By the time I visited the last Degas, I haven't spoken a word to a single person. It's been blissfully quiet, and I'm in my own world. There's only one person I miss, but she's across the ocean, perhaps finding her own answers as to what's next in her life and her career. As evening falls, I leave the museum, head to a nearby brasserie, and order a glass of white wine and a Niçoise salad. I dine alone at a sidewalk along the Seine, reading my book, taking photos. I'm okay. I'll be okay. And as I dine alone, I have the answer. I've found the way. If I've learned anything over the last few years, it's how to find my own contentment. I've found it in books, in art, in photography, and in my own 2 feet that take me wherever I want to go as I explore wherever I am. I suppose I am still curating, only now I'm curating photos of beautiful things. That's a new form of art, and art doesn't have to be in London. I didn't think it was my place to tell her what I'd do for her when she hasn't decided what she wants for herself. It's a hard thing to wait on someone you love, to give them the space to figure out what they want. But it turns out I needed this space too. It's given me all the clarity I didn't have last night. And so I plan to tell her what I'd do. I walk along the river, back to the metro, then to the Gare du Nord. The train returns me to my home city after midnight. It's 2 miles to my flat, and the air smells of late spring, so I walk. Just as I turn onto my street, a small red car pulls up. A woman with a suitcase places her bag on the curb. My chest constricts. Does the suitcase mean she's staying or going? I don't know, but I found my way. Time to tell her.
Chapter 27. Joe. My knee bounces as the Lyft driver weaves through the streets, blissfully empty at this hour. I want to speed up time, leap across the city, and arrive at his flat. Knock on the door. Ring the bell. Whatever I have to do. I didn't call or text because I want to surprise him. I want to tell him in person everything I've realized over the last 14 hours. Everything I had to fly across an ocean to see and hear and feel. Well past midnight, the driver sails onto Heath Street and pulls to the curb. Thank you. I say, my eyes lasered on the door of Heath's building, my phone in my hand to tell him I'm here. But out of the corner of my eye, I catch the profile of a man coming this way on foot. He's tall, handsome, with a stubbled jaw, strong cheekbones, lush lips. Kind, soulful eyes I can read even in the dark. But his eyes aren't on me inside this car. He's scanning the street, taking everything in. He's always doing that. Observing, seeing, cataloging. Even his own neighborhood, which he knows so well. I imagine he's been looking for the thing out of place. A new poster at a bus stop, a magazine left behind on a bench, a flower growing on a tree-lined corner. But I hope he's been looking for me. I grab my overnight bag, shove open the door, and vault onto the curb. I set down my bag, and the sound seems to jolt him. His smile is electric and instant. It's all the colors, all the songs, all the stories. It's every happy ending I've ever imagined.
Or so I hope. I run to him, even though he's only 20 feet away. When I reach him, I throw my arms around his neck and smother him in needy, determined kisses from the bottom of my soul. Kisses that say, I love you, I want you, I choose you. His lips lock with mine, and he kisses me back like I'm all his answers too. It's been less than 24 hours, but we reconnect as if it's been long, lonely months of writing poignant letters, staring out rain-spattered windows, gazing at the never-ending ticking of a clock. The ache I felt without him simply vanishes as we kiss on the streets of London. We kiss as if words are unnecessary, but that's not true. You should always tell the one you love that you love them. After some time, we break away. He holds my face, dusts a kiss to my eyelid, then pulls back, a wry grin on his face.
And how was your trip to New York?
I laugh, big and joyful, from the center of my very being. Incredibly illuminating.
Funny, my day was too. I went to Paris and spent some time with the art.
I practically bounce. I'm dying to know about his light bulb. Tell me what you did. He takes a small step back, his gaze steady as it holds mine. That cheeky grin vanishes. His brown eyes turn vulnerable.
I don't want to be presumptuous, but if you get the job in New York, I'd do long distance, or I'll go with you to New York, if you asked me to. Whatever you want, wherever you are.
I freeze. The enormity of his pronouncement sweeps over me, and it takes me several long seconds to register exactly what he's saying. And finally, when it hits me, the monumentality slams into me like a beautiful wave. How on earth did I become so lucky to find him? My heart climbs into my throat. I curl my hands around his hips, holding him tight. Shut up. Shut up, shut up, shut up, I mutter, overcome. Tears sting the back of my eyes, tears of wonder and joy. He laughs.
Really? I should shut up.
Oh my God, Heath, that's incredible, and it means the world to me. But I won't ask you to leave. You love it here. This is your home. And the thing is, I think I could love it here too. I catch my breath, swallow down the tears. I've got to say this without falling to pieces because I'd do all the same for him, wherever he is. I didn't have to interview because I already knew what I would say to an offer. His eyes darken for a moment, his brow furrowing. He's trying to process exactly what went down. I turned it down. I'm staying here with you. That's what I want, I say. And his face transforms into the most beautiful expression of wonder. I want to fall in love with London just like I've fallen in love with you. Would you keep showing me your London? His grin is even bigger and brighter than before, than it's ever been. He tugs me against him, presses his forehead to mine, and whispers a yes. When he pulls back, he swipes his thumb along my jaw.
You didn't even do the interview.
I didn't. I missed London. I missed you. But I had to go to New York to know that. To know there'd be no regrets.
And I had to know I'd go anywhere with you, if you'd want me to.
I am overwhelmed by his offer, so I take him up on what I most want this second. I want to go home with you now. That's where I want to go.
Good. Let's go. But I need to correct you on something.
I lift my chin, eager. What's that?
It's our London,
he says, and I fall in love with him even more. Reunions are better without clothes. A few minutes later, we're half naked in his flat, because who has time to get all the way undressed? There's just something about up-against-the-wall sex I'm learning. In the entryway, he cages me in, hitches my leg around his hip, and buries himself inside me. A sharp, hot blast of pleasure floods my cells. My eyes squeeze shut as exquisite agony radiates from my center, spreading everywhere. His hands grip me hard. His breath comes fast and desperate, and we scramble to get closer as he moves. We kiss as we come back together in a collision of mouths and skin and bodies. Soon I'm gasping, calling out his name as he takes me over the edge, then follows, joining me. Afterward, when we straighten up and make our way to the bed, he wraps one arm around me and sweeps out the other.
"And now, Joe Brennan, tell me the story of how you came to be in my bed at 2 in the morning on a Monday when you're supposed to be in New York."
Lying next to him, I begin the story of how I wrote my own ending. When I got off the plane in New York, everything that was supposed to feel right felt all wrong, I say. My heart a little heavy again as I remember the weight anchored in my chest from around 12 hours ago. I was back in the place I loved, and yet I missed London because you're here. He runs his fingers down my thigh, his eyes sparkling with joy.
Go on.
My friends were waiting for me. Emerson, TJ, Nolan, and Easton. They were all there on the other side of security. I texted Emerson on the flight, and she'd called them. She knew I'd need to see everyone. We sat in the chairs by the baggage carousel, and I told them I missed everything across the ocean.
I missed you so much.
I'm glad you encouraged me to go. I needed it. I needed to have no regrets. But to do that, I had to see them, to know that no matter how much I love them and New York and the life I had, I'm okay not seeing them every day, or every week, or every month.
I'm so glad you experienced that for yourself,
he says. Me too. I shrug, a little sheepishly. Well, the last month or so has taught me that. But once New York was an option again, I think I needed to go there to see that this is where I belong. I stab the mattress like it's a map of London. They'll always be a part of my life, and I'll be a part of theirs. But I met this guy here, and he's pretty great. He even offered to go anywhere with me.
He sounds bloody amazing,
Heath teases. He is, and that's why I'd go anywhere with him, too, I say. And my guy just smiles beautifully, saying nothing, but saying everything in his expression. Maybe we both needed this brief time apart to embrace our togetherness, and to know how far we'd go for each other. So, I turned around, bought a ticket, and hopped on the next flight back here. To see you. To surprise you. Heath pushes up so he's sitting too. He runs his knuckles down my cheek.
You're the best surprise ever. I was thrilled. Flabbergasted and thrilled.
Good. I grin in satisfaction. That's how I wanted you to feel.
And I want you to stay, Joe. I want you here. There's so much more to see of London, and there's the rest of the UK and all of Europe. We can see everything together.
I swallow past the knot in my throat, the knot of overwhelming emotions that tether me to this man and this city. We have a day off today, I say. Let's start then. He smiles wryly.
I don't have a library card, but do you mind if I check you out?
I fall into his arms, laughing and happy, feeling ridiculously lucky. I'm so glad I walked into that bar to pick up a hot Englishman for a shag.
And look what you got. A grumpy one who wants to make you the happiest.
I didn't have to ask anyone to write the ending. This is the story of our life together, and it's only just beginning.
Chapter 28. Heath. We don't go into Highsmith together, and we decide not to discuss our relationship with Emily. I'm not even sure there's a need to disclose anything, especially since I won't be working for the company for much longer. Joe heads in first, and I work on my resignation letter on my phone at a cafe near the office. When it's done, short and grateful, I go to the office to print it out. Resigning after almost 20 years should be done in person, not in an email. When I reach the 6th floor, I say hello to the receptionist, then make for my office. But Rhea stops me before I reach the door.
Psst, Heath!
Her bracelets jingle as she calls me over. Yes?
Did you hear?
My brow creases. Hear what?
Sandy spilled the beans in the break room. She was grabbing a granola bar, and she said...
Heels click clack across the hardwood floor. Emily sweeps her red hair off her neck, waggles her manicured fingers. Joe is beside her, a smile brewing.
I'll tell you later,
Rhea adds. Sure, I say with a grin as she takes off.
I have exciting news,
Emily declares, clasping her hands. I can't wait to hear that Joe won the post. I couldn't be more thrilled for my woman. I hope it's that you selected Joe Brennan for VP. She's the best person for the job, bar none, I say. That's the truth, the whole truth and nothing but. Emily tilts her head and rubs her knuckle against her ear.
Heath, did you just compliment a co-worker and recommend her for a job you applied for?
Even people can wipe the grin off my face today. I did. She's energetic and passionate and driven. She's everything you want. Emily gestures for Joe and me to go into my office, so we do, and she shuts the door behind us. The two of them sit on the couch, and I take the chair. Then I wait. This isn't my moment. Emily straightens her spine, sits taller.
Joe is ideal for the reasons you've said. She brings all the vigor and passion we need.
She does, I say.
Thank you,
Joe says, and I can tell she's holding something in. If it's a secret, it's one I want to know. Emily's eyes stay on me.
But your knowledge is unparalleled. It's hard to live without that. Your insight, your contacts, and you two are an excellent team,
she says. She glances between us, taking a beat, punctuating it with a deep breath.
And so, I hope you'll be willing to work together as co-VPs.
I like surprises. They're fun and keep me on my toes. And this is a surprise I would have loved a month ago, even a few weeks ago. But it's not the job or the life I want. I'm lucky to have this second chance at love, and maybe a second chance at a career, too. Most of all, I have a chance to carve out the life I truly crave. And my day in Paris showed me what that could look like. I'm just lucky that I get to take a chance at that life with Joe by my side. I smile graciously, nod in acknowledgement, then give my answer. Thank you. I truly appreciate that. But I'm going to decline and give my 1 month's notice. Joe's face is mostly impassive, but a smile is sneaking up on her lips. I don't think it's because she wants me to quit, but because she's happy for me that Emily wanted us both to stay. Emily's smile, however, vanishes.
Is this because you only want the job if you can have it all to yourself?
I chuckle, shaking my head. No, not at all. I'm not that egocentric. I'd just rather do other things. Jo dips her head, her hair hiding her face as if she can't stay poker-faced any longer. Maybe the secret is that she's keeping my secrets, that she knows my heart. Last night I told Jo that visiting the Musée d'Orsay affirmed what I said to her on Friday night. I love art, but I don't love my job. And now another career path is calling out to me.
What sort of other things?
Emily asks. I'll figure that out. I know the answer, but it's private and I don't need to share. What I can share is this. Some of it will include art market consulting, though, and if I do that, I'll work remotely. Like I've been craving.
Then you'll consult for us,
she says, unrelenting. I blink in surprise. For a woman who took more than a month to make a decision, she's suddenly incredibly decisive. I laugh. I will.
Yes, you're starting an art market consulting business. I should be your first client. This last month has shown me what I want for this auction house. I'm greedy and ambitious. I have no problem telling you that. I want Highsmith to be the best. That's why I considered both of you for the post. You're both among the best. You both bring something to the table. Heath, if I can't have you as a co-VP, I'll take your knowledge and insight as a consultant. I won't let anyone else have access to your brain.
Joe smiles broadly now.
It is a very big brain, Heath.
I roll my eyes.
So, you'll do it,
Emily presses.
You'll consult for us remotely.
I could play coy, but what's the point? Consulting is part of my new career path. When I told Joe all the things that I wanted to do next, she said, "Sounds like you'll have a bunch of side hustles." That's the goal, and all of those side hustles I can do solo, including this one that Emily's offering up on a silver platter.
Working remotely in the art market.
Yes, I think I can be convinced, I tell Emily and she beams. But I'm still giving notice.
I know, and I'm still keeping you. I always find a way, Heath.
That she does. A month later, I walk Jo to work, press a kiss to her lips, then hand her a coffee cup and a brown bag. Now, play nice with others, and be sure to share your cookie, I tell her.
Don't you mean biscuit?
Look at you with your sexy British lingo, I say, and she clutches the bag. Be sure to share your biscuit.
As if I'd share my treats,
she says, then stretches on tiptoe to kiss the tip of my nose.
And you play nice with the books.
I will. She goes into the office, and I turn the other way, popping into Nigel's shop to pick up a new paperback. He has the newest Rees lock, and he waggles it to tempt me.
I got this for you, but the question is, do you even deserve it?
I growl. Piss off. He cracks up, slaps a palm on the counter.
There you go. A bastard as always.
And free to be one now. I say dryly. I reach for a pair of socks, the ones with the unicorn saying, "This meeting is fucking bullshit." I'll take these, too.
For Joe,
he says and her heart's a fluttering warble.
Speaking of, when she comes by the shop, I never wonder if she deserves something like I do with you. Hell, I don't even charge her when she buys her books and candles and cards from me. She's so bloody pleasant I just give her my wares. The question is, how did you convince her to be with such a grumpy bugger?
Books, I say. We fell in love over books.
Now that makes perfect sense.
I say goodbye, and he returns to his Sudoku, while I head over to the library. There I drop off my latest bounty with Alice. Her eyes light up as she investigates the books Joe and I have gobbled up in the last month.
Ooh, a Hazel Valentine and a T.J. Hartman. I do love a good romance.
As do I agree. She arches a brow.
You love a good romance?
Is that so impossible?
Doesn't seem like your cup of tea.
I don't only love a good romance, I love a great one too. I thumb the stack and leave her to them. Heading into the library proper, I find a quiet table, turn on a green lamp, and flip open my laptop. I work on a research project for Emily for a few hours, savoring every silent second that I'm there. With the art consulting portion of my other things done for the day, I check my phone on the way out and head to the Seven Noses in Soho. Griffin's adding the art installation, no statues set into walls, to his tours, and he's hired me to take photos for his website. That's one of my side hustles, too. Taking photos for him and for other London tour companies, highlighting the usual suspects and the hidden gems of this great city. Maybe someday I'll write a book about unusual sights in London, or maybe I'll keep them all for myself and my Joe. I spend an hour or so in the gallery, taking hundreds of pictures, then editing them that afternoon. In the evening, I meet Joe for dinner. Rhea, Freddy, and I had this brilliant idea about creating a video series for a new artist, she tells me over curry. We eat and talk, and then walk along the river, stopping to kiss by a bridge. Take a picture, she tells me. I do as she asks, and she sends it to her friends. A few months later, we go out early on a Saturday morning and check out flats that are both a bedroom and an office. We find one at the edge of Covent Garden, overlooking a small park. This one could be perfect, she says, as we head up the creaky steps behind the leasing agent. When we reach the flat, Jo goes straight for the window, then points animatedly, her eyes twinkling. Look! Wrapping an arm around her waist, I join her in peering out the window. I chuckle, then kiss her nose. Ducks. Like I said, it's perfect for you. A room with a view of a duck pond. I turn to the agent. We'll take it. A couple weeks later, we move in together, and I set a framed photo on the mantel, one of many shots of her and me.
Epilogue. Jo. I was right. Heath and I fly to New York in the fall. Autumn in Manhattan is gorgeous, and I show him around Central Park where the leaves burst with color, then we visit my former stomping grounds. A pinball arcade I love in Murray Hill. A bookstore in the Village. The St. James Theater, where we see a production of Anything Goes with Emerson and Nolan. I take him out to Gin Joint in Chelsea, and we order Moscow Mules and listen to the piano player croon old standards. And one by one, my found family joins us. I feel like I already know you, TJ jokes. Heath laughs as they shake hands.
Same to you. How's your book coming along? Brilliantly, Heath says as he wraps an arm around me. We've done a lot of research.
We have indeed. He's compiling a book of photos, The Best Places in London to Kiss, another one of his side hustles, and he's so damn happy juggling all three, taking photos for tours, consulting on art, and crafting a new book of images. I'm a very willing subject. I help him test all the places where he takes pictures. Research is so important. And after London, we'll tackle Paris, then Vienna, then Rome. We'll kiss all over the world and share the best spots with others. Easton and Bellamy are next to join us at the bar. Then, at last, Jude comes in, and that feels right, too. All of us here like this. Has Jo shown you my favorite food truck? Emerson asks after Heath gives her cheek kisses.
The one with the tacos and ramen noodles? What more could anyone want than tacos and ramen? Nolan quips. I can't think of a thing, Heath says, and when we sit back down on the sapphire blue couch, he drapes an arm around me. Except love.
Exactly, I say. And as I look around, I see so much of it right here. I see my friends falling in love, staying in love, longing for love, finding their homes with the people they love. I found mine, and it's across the sea, with this man right by my side.
Epilogue. A little later, Heath. The ivy is relentless, climbing higher and growing thicker along the walls of our church. This place doesn't have a name, so I've given it one. Time to share it, too. This is the last place to photograph for my book of kisses. I snap several shots, taking them from many angles, and after a while, Jo joins me, walking up and brushing my cheek with a kiss. Want one more? She asks. For the book? No. For our mantle. I got a new frame. It can go next to the shot of all of us at Gin Joint. We can have another one of you and me. We have many of those, but I'm always happy to add to the collection. Turning the camera around, I snap a shot of the two of us, then one of us kissing. When we break the kiss, I move quickly, so quickly. She blinks in surprise to see me on one knee, camera on the ground. Joe Brennan. When I first came here all by myself, I imagined sharing this place with someone someday. Then you walked into my life and instantly became that person. I say as her eyes shine and her smile takes off for the heavens. And that, your smile, is one of the things I love madly about you. You're so bright, you're like the sun, and I need you like I need sunlight. I love you, and I want to spend the rest of my days and nights with you. Only you.
Yes, yes, yes,
she says, falling to her knees. She grabs my face and kisses me hard and beautifully before I can even get the ring out. I let myself bask in the moment. Not long ago, I figured you got what you got. I believed love didn't come calling twice. I thought I'd have to be content alone for the rest of my days. But then Joe walked into my city and straight into my heart, teaching me that great love is possible a second time around if you let it happen, if you embrace it, if you cherish the one you love. She is the great love of my life. Maybe it's kismet. Or maybe it's seizing the chance when kismet brings a woman like Joe into your world. When she breaks the kiss, I finish what I started. Will you marry me?
I will, and I'm going to love you for the rest of my life.
Several months later, we marry in our hidden gem of a church, and that's just the start of our very happy ending. Joy and Griffin's story can be found in Wanderlust. Emerson and Nolan's story is coming up in Shut Up and Kiss Me. TJ's story is coming in Hopelessly Bromantic. Easton and Bellamy's story was told in Come Again.
This has been an Audible original, produced by Audible Originals, written by Lauren Blakely. Performed by Julia Whalen and Shane East. Executive producers, Rose Hilliard and Kat Lambrix. Acquisition and development, Joanne Peretz. Vice President of Audible Studios, Mike Charzik. Editor-in-Chief, Audible Original Publishing, David Blum. Copyright 2022 by Audible Originals. Sound recording copyright 2021 by Audible Originals, LLC.